In this week's episode, car chases,
mannequins falling from cliffs,
and absolutely no bras. Welcome to Blockbuster Nostalgia.
Francisco Landine.
I'm E.G. Seitz. Welcome to the Greaties edition.
Great 80s, episode 2.
Episode 2 of the podcast, we are counting down the top 100 grossing movies of the 1980s.
As told by IMDb.com.
It's very important to note, this is domestic gross only. We don't care about those other countries. Those other countries suck. Not really. If you're listening to us from other country, we love you.
Yeah, you guys are actually pretty cool.
Yeah, actually, really, we like travel.
Yeah, we suck. Yeah.
I wouldn't go that far, but you know, we're all love here. We're all love. So we are talking about good old Jimmy Bond, James Bond, 007, yeah. License to Kill.
For Your Eyes Only.
For Your Eyes Only, this is 1981.
This is not going to be the last time we talk about James Bond.
No, he's going to be coming up. This was a gigantic hit, and it spawned a lot of, well, I mean, look, James Bond was already a pretty successful series, but this definitely reinvigorated the whole franchise and kept it going. And, you know, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, for a guy who didn't really watch too much James Bond myself, I would suck its dick.
And I would watch. So, this is directed by John Glenn. This is his first, directorial debut.
Yeah, he was a longtime editor before. They gave him the chance to do this one, and he knocked it out of the park, I think.
I think he did spoiler alert, I think we both really like this movie.
Yeah, for sure. It was definitely like a cool return back, well, not return back, but kind of staying away from the whole, like, gadgets and watches shooting lasers and shit like that. And
yeah, it was pretty, and that was definitely a thing they were going for. They were trying to ground it a little more after going into outer space in the last one and getting a little too cutesy. This one very much is about car chases. It's about, you know, fights and scuba diving and kind of practical stunts and stuff like that more than it is about gadgets. There's a little bit of that, though.
Yeah, cool ladies, haircuts all the way, I think.
Oh, yeah, awesome. for sure. And the fashion one. we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves, but one thing that really struck me throughout the whole film is that James Bond dresses like my grandfather used to. And I don't know if that's just because they're, like, of the similar generation, or if it's because he's, like, 54 in this movie.
Yeah, but he also, crushes way more ass than I'm going to say your father did. Your grandfather did.
That's a fair assumption,
there's,
I think.
There's a lot of girls they're just throwing themselves out.
Yeah, including someone that is clearly underage.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to talk a little bit about the movie. If you are not familiar with our podcast, we talk about just everything in general, I think, right?
Yeah, pretty much. It's what we thought of the movie. We'll give you a little bit behind the scenes. You know, just anything we found kind of interest. Now, before we get too far into it, we got some numbers. First of all, we'd like to address one of the things we forgot about the last episode, and that's how much it ended up making. Last week we watched Down and Out in Beverly Hills.
Right, which domestically grossed $62.1 million.
Which was good enough for 100th place in the decade of the 1980s as far as domestic gross. Now, this film did only slightly better domestically.
Yeah, $62.3 million.
However, it crushed worldwide.
$195 million worldwide. Mostly, I think, the UK markets.
Yeah, UK, Europe did very well. Now, and it's something to note, this movie had a budget of $28 million. Now, one thing I did want to address is I've heard a few podcasts that they would read off, you know, what movies made and stuff, not really understanding. Yeah, the gross, not really understanding what that meant. Now, it's important to note that, first of all, that $28 million, that's the budget of the film. That does not include marketing. I'm not entirely, this movie came out before I was born, so I'm not entirely sure how big the marketing campaign was, but I assume it was fairly large.
Yeah, it had to have been. I mean, you're talking about James Bond, who's huge. Just the poster alone
was... Yeah, we're going to talk about that poster some more. We teased it last week.
Really amazing poster.
It's an amazing poster. We'll put it up on the blog for sure, because it's fantastic. But another thing to keep in mind, too, is that gross figure, the studio's only getting about half of that back. You know, depending on how the international tariffs and all that works, but it's roughly half. So you figure really they were getting back around, you know, 100 million minus the 28 minus the budgeting. It was still a huge smash hit.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely enough to make it 99 on our list.
Yeah. In number 99. And, it was such a huge smash hit that the director ended up directing the next four James Bond. He did every James Bond movie that came out in the 1980s. So he covered the end of Roger Moore's run and the entirety of Timothy Dalton's.
Yeah, which is amazing. And if you think like, oh, Sam Mendes is coming back for another James Bond movie. Oh, that's crazy. That's never happened before. No, you're wrong. John Glenn did five of them.
Yeah, five. Not to mention, like you said, he had edited and done some second unit direction on, I believe, the three previous.
Yeah.
So he was part of this franchise for a good long while.
Yeah, just a couple of things. This is the 12th. James Bond movie to have come out. This is the fifth Roger Moore James Bond movie.
Yeah, he did a lot. He ended up doing seven, yeah.
More than any other person, more than any of the other actors, more than Sean Connery, more than any of them, seven he made. So that's pretty cool. I mean, Roger Moore did it until he was too old to do it. He was already in his 50s.
By this movie, and he still did two more after this, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, he was in his late 40s, early 50s, still knocking out Bond movies, which is pretty cool. Pretty cool, Roger Moore, right there.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, you can tell, obviously, in some of the stunts that he has, you know, a stunt double doing them for him. But even during the stuff where it's clearly him, like he, you know, it's not Bruce Lee or anything, but it, you know, it's a reasonable action hero kind of guy.
Yeah, and you know, nowadays you get a lot of the Taken and you know, a lot of the older guys coming back and kicking
Expendables.
Some ass. Yeah, Roger Moore was doing that way before.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was 50. He was banging the young chicks.
Yeah, every girl in this movie is around half of his age.
Yeah, oh yeah, at the very least. And he's banging all of them. He's killing all kinds of guys. He kills a lot of guys in the movie.
It's crazy to think how many people James Bond just straight up murders.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider, like, this is a movie. I mean, I watched this movie as a kid. I assume you probably did, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I watched all the Bond movies as a kid, and they were, like, I don't necessarily think they were considered kids' movies, but they were certainly something that, like, I mean, this movie is rated PG.
Yeah, but it was before PG-13.
Right.
Right.
But even so, like, it was just something that, like, people just were like, oh, yeah, those are cool movies for your kids to see. Like, him smashing ass and killing 40, 50 people every movie just brutally. Like, even the beginning, which is great.
Oh, yeah. It's an amazing beginning, I think, and... He kills Blofeld, right, from the other James Bond movies in the wheelchair with the cat.
Yeah, yeah. Who has this great, like, giant video setup where he's remote controlling this helicopter.
Yeah, and then James Bond, it, like, figures out how to use a helicopter, and then he picks him up and drops him into one of those...
Straight big, down like
a smokestack.
Smokestack, yeah, for like an industrial factory. It's great. It's such a, like, and it's a perfect shot. He just tips the helicopter right down the hole.
Yeah, and he's in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't going to fight back. He could have placed him down wherever.
No.
And no, he's just like,
you're burning alive.
Fuck you, I'm tired of this. And just, by the way, if you didn't know this, there will be some blue language, some adult language.
I always forget to mention that. Well, hopefully by episode 3, I'll remember to mention that at the beginning of the episode. We're sorry if... Your kids.
Yeah, you're 12 fucks heard, into this.
Yeah, exactly. Heard a couple fucks.
But it's a really cool way of starting the movie. But I think the best thing about starting this movie is...
Absolute best.
The grave, right?
It's you will never see this grave. And this
it's
is such
a
movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is such a movie thing.
It's James Bond's wife is buried and he goes and he lays down some flowers. But on the gravestone... It says her name. Usually you would see something like beloved wife and mother.
Yeah,
or, you know, like caring
reasonable.
Person or whatever. No, this says beloved wife of James Bond.
It's very specific. just in case this is your first Bond movie and you don't know why he might be visiting a grave looking sad,
yeah,
that's his wife.
Like, if she didn't get that enough when she was alive.
Right, yeah.
Like, oh, my husband James is James Bond. Yeah, James Bond's. Hey, this is, hey, honey, come over here. That's James Bond's wife. Oh, what's her name? I don't know, but she's married to James Bond.
Yeah, who cares? Mrs. James Bond.
They should put the shit on her grave.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? They did.
Yeah. So, did she pick out that grave, or was James like, no, put my name on it?
Yeah, that's a good point, because, you know, like, she's dead.
Yeah.
So where she, you know, he's like, hey,
I'm sure she probably wanted, like, some angel statue and, like, you know, beloved, you know, daughter of Jesus or something. He's like, no, James Bond goes on that thing.
She's like, can you mention my four children on that gravestone? He's like, no, make sure you put wife of James Bond.
Yeah.
That's all anybody, that's where the money comes from.
Yeah, exactly. That's the money shot.
So it starts off with that. We see that, which is awesome, I think.
Yeah, fantastic.
Very movie thing. And then go right into a cool action sequence with some amazing helicopter work.
Yeah, really great stunt work. And this is going to be a running theme of this movie, is that the stunt work is phenomenal.
Yeah, amazing. Everything from, like, motorcycles on snow, helicopters, underwater
skiing.
Skiing.
Yeah, pretty much everything in this movie, the stunt guys deserve
rock climbing.
So much credit.
In fact, one of the stuntmen did die during the bobsled scene, and the whole snowing, and there's a motorcycle driving through the bobsled track. It's amazing.
Really great sequence. Yeah. It's very sad to hear that someone actually passed away.
Yeah.
But it's a phenomenal sequence, and all the stunt work in this movie just really, really shines. So that's definitely something that you see, and like you said, right off the bat, this helicopter pilot, whoever was doing the stunts for it, does a fantastic job, and that whole sequence is really fun.
Yeah, one of the coolest things I think about this movie is the revenge plot that doesn't even involve really James Bond. It's Melina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bond, basically, the plot of this movie, well, just real quick, kind of the overall plot, just in case you've never seen it, is the movie starts off, there's the bit with the helicopter and whatnot, but the movie starts off with a boat, the English Navy, I guess, or Secret Service or whatever, MI6, and they have it's a MacGuffin, whatever. It's a control panel that sends out signals to all of their submarines, and it's got codes and all this stuff, and it gets bombed, it sinks, everyone's after this thing because it could potentially control essentially all the submarines of the British Navy, and everyone's kind of rushing to get it. And so Bond is just brought in to kind of get this thing, find out what happened to it, what's going on, get this thing. Meanwhile, our leading lady, her parents are killed very early on in the movie, and her whole thing is just, I want to kill the people responsible.
Yeah, which she does with a crossbow.
Yeah, which is great.
Which is pretty badass. Yeah, yeah. It's very badass. I think as far as revenge goes, crossbow is a pretty fucking cool way of killing people.
Yeah, I would say so. People, zombies. Crossbow is a good way to go.
So, I mean, shoots the guy. It's a great bit. He's jumping into the pool, and she shoots him in the back, but you don't see it. And he does this horrible belly flop into the pool, and everybody laughs at him. And there's this cool reveal that he's got a fucking arrow in his back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it comes as kind of a reveal to the audience, too. They do a pretty good job of hiding it.
Yeah.
Like, the only real giveaway to it is there's a little bit of a sound of the arrow.
Yeah.
But if you're not paying super close attention, it just, like, looks like he falls and, like you said, does this terrible belly flop.
Yeah, because I was like, what a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Who doesn't know how to jump in a pool? And then, bam, dead. So I was like, oh, that's crazy. Oh, something about that pool scene, though. One of the bikini girls in that was actually a male-to-female transsexual.
Yeah, very, very, and I don't know if the producers knew or anything, but you can't, I mean, at least from the shots we saw, like, nobody stood out as anything other than beautiful ladies.
Yeah, we didn't see, like, a super manly woman.
Yeah, no, nothing like that, so. But yeah, that sequence, and it is one of those things where it gets right into that good James Bond, like, okay, yeah, there's going to be ladies. And so you go to a pool with, like, what, 40 just ladies in bikinis wandering around?
Yeah, because why not?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I mean, you get a pool, you got money, what are you going to fill it with? Yeah.
With ladies.
Ladies in bikinis, yeah. It's not going to be, like, dogs or nothing.
I mean,
that'd be funny.
Yeah, that would be pretty funny. Dogs in bikinis?
Bikini dogs. is a pretty good idea.
Actually, now I think trademark. That's a movie. We should make that movie, Bikini Dogs.
We'll make a lot of money on Bikini Dogs.
I'm pretty sure. But before actually we get too far into it, I want to jump back just for a minute and talk about the opening sequence and the music.
Oh, that song. Yeah,
song, yes.
For Your Eyes Only, yeah.
It's, you know, we talked about it while it was going on, but it's very much that crux of, like, disco pop and, like, 80s pop.
Oh, yeah, right in between. Sheena Easton recorded it and was nominated, I think, for the Academy Award for it.
Yeah, I believe so.
And, yeah, it's very much right in between disco and pop. It was like, oh, everybody's gay bashing on disco, and so we got to figure something out. And they put in this cool song, really cool song, actually, I thought.
It's okay. I did find it interesting, of course, you know, the James Bond motif. They do the silhouettes of all the ladies and Bond and the guns and whatever. There's several, most of the shots of the ladies, though, they are not doing sexy things. Like, they're just, like, standing there or, like, crouching down weird. Like, it's very, it's not sexy.
During the opening song, you mean?
Yeah, during the opening song.
It is kind of weird. It's not like the usual kind of cliche idea that you have of, like, naked lady with a gun and blows a kiss and
stuff
like that.
Yeah, there's no, none of that. Like, they do zoom in on the singer's lips and stuff at a couple of times. You know, and obviously it's, you know, it's silhouettes of pretty ladies, but it's just like they're not doing traditionally sexy things.
No, yeah. It was interesting. But it was a really cool looking, I think, opening sequence. As far as James Bond movies go, I think it was really cool looking. Very 80s.
Yeah, very much so.
Definitely. Which is cool because that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
The greatest. But that, so then we go into this whole storyline, this revenge storyline.
Oh, and yeah, before another thing I wanted to bring up is when they go onto the boat with the British guys, everyone's wearing these amazing sweaters.
Oh, yeah. And like sweaters I wish I had.
Yeah, pretty much. No. Great, great sweaters. And the guy that's at the controls of this MacGuffin that everyone's after, he is literally chained to the controls.
Yeah.
And so, I could not figure out why.
Because that's how fucking important these controls were, I think.
Yeah, but they're built into the boat. Like, they're fucking bolted into the boat. And later you see there's a bomb attached to them. If you try and remove them, the bomb will explode. Like, why is this guy chained? And then the guy ends up dying because the boat sinks. Because he's chained to the fucking thing, like...
I wonder if, like, there was a crazy, ridiculous... Like, we made these awesome controls and everything, but anybody could just walk by and flick it, and then England is destroyed.
Right.
Like, oh, you know what? We better keep one guy there at all times.
Yeah.
Well, how do we do that? Let's fucking chain.
What if he needs to go to the bathroom?
Nah, the buckets.
Yeah,
just pisses in the bucket.
It's like, don't look at me! Don't look at me! I mean, so, anyways, I just thought that was really bizarre.
Yeah, it was a really cool boat explosion.
Yeah, it was a very cool boat explosion, and then you get to this scene with the head, like, I don't know if he's the head of the KGB or if he's just supposed to be like a KGB bigwig or something, but he does not speak Russian.
Yeah, no accent.
He does not have an accent when he's speaking English. And he also he's obviously an older man. Like, this is a movie filled with older men, and there, he has this very attractive secretary, and he is pawing at her and, like, smiling at her and giving her the creepiest creep looks the entire time he's on screen.
And I'm going to say this wasn't a bad guy thing. I'm going to say this was an 80s thing.
I'm pretty sure they're just like, hey, this guy's in, you know, it's 81, this guy's in power. Obviously, he's going to be banging his hot secretary.
It's like, I think back in the 80s, you were like, all right, I'm going to bust my ass. I'm going to work really fucking hard through my 30s and 40s. And in my 50s, I get to fuck secretaries all day long.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I do.
That's the dream, right?
Yeah, that was a dream in the early 80s. Like, fucking secretaries in my 50s and 60s.
Is that not still the dream? Because that's kind of
that's a good point. I think that is still the dream. I don't think that has changed.
Yeah.
Not, at least not here.
And that's how I got fired. No, but, yeah, so I love that bit. I also wanted to say, so the way the main lady, the main Bond girl for this movie, there's three Bond girls in this movie. The main one,
Melina,
she's the one we are introduced first. And she, right after, she gets dropped off by a plane onto her parents' boat. And immediately the plane takes off, comes back around, shoots up the boat, kills her parents.
Yeah.
She does not look sad at all.
No, yeah, she looks a little bit, she looks like stunned.
Yeah.
Like
she's
shocked.
A little surprised, but she's not, there's no tears, there's no shouting. Like, she's just like, she's a little shocked, and then she just kind of looks up.
Yeah, almost like she expected somebody to die, but she's like, oh, that's weird. Like, I didn't think everybody was going to die in this boat.
Yeah, and so what? I guess we'll start with her. What did you think of her as an actress and as a Bond girl?
I thought she was good. I thought that she was really pretty.
She is very pretty.
Yeah, which is important for Bond girls.
Very much so.
Yeah, very pretty. I think her storyline is the best part of this movie, actually. I think it's the part that separates it from the other Bond movies, mm-hmm. where you're just doing like, oh, there's missile codes and fucking...
Well, and it's the only one that has any sort of like... emotional attachment to it whatsoever.
Yeah, character arc. She's the one that really gets to do all that. James Bond just kicks some ass.
Yeah.
And she's the one that gets to experience all that stuff. And I thought that her... I thought that she was a good actress. I thought that she did a good job. She was really pretty.
Yeah, she has amazing eyes. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she was good.
For sure. And I think... I think all the Bond ladies were pretty cool and had their own little characteristics to them.
They did, actually. I thought all three were kind of interesting. You have you have Melina, who's the main one. She's in a huge chunk of the movie. She's played by Carol Burnett. You also have Lynn Holly Johnson plays BB Doll.
Oh, BB Doll. We got to talk a lot about BB Doll.
Yeah, which I don't think it's any sort of... I don't think it's an accident that her name sounds like Baby Doll.
Oh yeah, because she is super young.
Super young. Now the actual actress, she's about what 22 or so when this is filming, and Melina's actress, she's only about 23 or so. So they're pretty close to the same age. However, she does look a lot younger, and it's pretty clear from the way they treat her in the movie that she is a teenager.
Yeah, they never say her age, but. I guess Roger Moore, in his book, stated that she was actually supposed to play a 16-year-old girl.
Which makes a lot of sense. We'll see later on. She tries several times to seduce Roger Moore, including showing up in his hotel room, showering, and then getting in his bed naked.
Yeah, and he has a great reaction to it, which is like, put your clothes back on, I'll get you some ice cream.
Yeah, yeah, he totally treats her like a kid the whole time, even though she's being very implicit on the fact that, A... she's not a virgin.
Yeah.
B, having sex will help her build muscles, which she needs because she is a professional athlete.
Which I'm going to say is fair game. I mean,
she's pushing really hard. Yeah. It reminded me, I told you about this, it reminded me a lot of the episode of Archer from, I think it was season 3, where it's either a 15 or 16-year-old that's really going after Archer pretty hard. And I'm pretty sure it's because of this specific Bond movie.
Yeah, I think we would all like put on this like face like, oh my God, James Bond, 16, really? But then we would all be thinking like, yeah, I mean, of course. She pushed really hard.
He's in a tough spot.
Yeah, he's in a tough spot. Nobody's going to know. Yeah. For one,
it's Europe.
It's Europe. Nobody will know. She says that it's good for her career. So who are you to deprive her of muscle tone?
Right, right. She's trying to win a gold medal.
Yeah, exactly. And she looks 18.
She looks 20, but which because she is. But the other thing that I think is really funny. So she immediately, for really no particular reason, other than I guess we're just supposed to go on faith. That James Bond is irresistible to women because it's James Bond.
It's James Bond.
Yeah. But so there's another older guy who at one point, much later in the movie, she totally is just like, oh, you're old. And it's like, that guy's like the same age as James Bond.
Yeah. She's like, you're too old for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you're like, no, I think Roger Moore is like 5 years older than
Yeah. the last of the Bond girls, I'll mention real quick. It's Cassandra Harris is the actress. Bond girl's name is Lyselle.
Lyselle, yeah, yeah. She's like Austrian, right?
Something like that. She's Austrian. She originally is dating this guy or with this other guy, and she's sent to kind of seduce James because they know he's a spy. But of course, you know, she, you know, falls madly in love with him or whatever. I don't know if she necessarily falls madly in love with him, but she goes, she's pretty complicit with everything.
I think if you watch enough Bond movies, you know that she's a disposable Bond girl.
Oh yeah, very much so.
Yeah, she's the one that's going to die, and she does.
And she does.
Spoiler alert, sorry, but she's the one that's
going to
die.
This movie is 30 plus years
old. If you haven't seen it.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it yet. and if you really care, go ahead and pause this and go back and watch the movie first.
Yeah, and she's the one that dies. And of course, she has a scene where she wears no bra, just like the rest of them.
I think. Every girl in this movie. Well, I don't know about the young one, but certainly the two older girls and several other kind of just extras, no bras.
I noticed the young one. She was not wearing a bra.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody gets a turn at not wearing a bra. Even Melina, the main Bond girl, who was not very well endowed.
Yeah, no, she's a skinnier girl. She's very petite.
Yeah, even she was just like braless.
Oh yeah,
I was cool if you're actually, and in fact the disposable in the cell.
Yeah. Get to see full on nudity. Now this is one of those things that we have the benefit, I guess, of HD and all this stuff as we're watching them now. Obviously, it's a very quick shot, but must have slipped past the old.
The old ratings board, because it was PG and then it was R, right? And there was no PG-13. This is before PG-13.
Right.
But yeah, you see nipple.
Yeah,
her
shirt falls off a little bit, and yeah.
I have a feeling that back then, though, the ratings board was just like 4, 5, 6-year-old guys drinking scotch, smoking cigars.
I would hope so.
Yeah, and being like, oh, all right, cool, yes, yes, no, yes. And they saw nipple enough.
And, we talked about a bit, when this was sort of a kids' movie in a way, but not really. So it is kind of weird to see full-on nudity.
Yeah, I think kind of like Westerns. It's a kids' movie at heart.
Yeah.
It's very much like every kid wants to be James Bond. It's full of amazing car chases, amazing stunt work. So when you're a kid and you see that, and you're like, that's what I want to do. I want to fight guys skiing.
Right.
And so it's very much at heart, it's a kid's movie. It's what every kid wants to grow up to be.
Yeah.
But then when you think about it, really, he's killing people. He's really, kicking people off cliffs and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's murdering people and banging a lot of chicks.
Yeah. And that's always been a thing with Bond, too, is, it's very clear that he bangs chicks all the time, but you never get to see it because you still want to be able to show it to kids.
Yeah, and even the chicks that he doesn't bang, they're still pretty hot.
Oh, yeah.
The scientist girls, when he goes in with Q.
When he goes, and all of the girls that work in the science lab are, models.
Yeah, they're, 22-year-old models and super hot and, testing all this equipment, but they're really hot.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it has this whole, sexuality in it. I mean, it's James Bond. So
right. We kind of talked a little bit when he walks into Miss Moneypenny's office for the first time, and before you even see him, he throws his hat and brings on to the thing, just like McClintock.
Lands perfectly on the hat rack, which is awesome, really pimp.
And then he walks in with total pimp and gives her a flower, this whole thing, and that's Bond, right?
Yeah, that's Bond 100%. And also, I think it did a good job at not relying on the gadgets, but still showing enough of the gadgets.
Yeah, you get just enough so where it still feels like a Bond movie. He still has, there's still some of that with the bomb that he uses later on.
The identigraph
room. Yeah, the identigraph. Oh, well, we're getting there.
Yeah, yeah. Identigraph room. It's a whole fucking room. It's a whole room where you go in and you describe what a person looks like in the computer. It's a giant fucking computer with reel to reel and all these dials and shit, and then you describe to it, and
you basically, if you've ever played a BioWare or a Bethesda game where you do character creations at the beginning and you have to adjust the nose and the eyes,
it's like wireframe almost. Yeah,
it's that basically. It's a really prototype of that.
Yeah, and then they say it searches all the CIA databases and all the
MI6
and MI6. Yeah, databases, which nowadays seems just like Google.
The internet, yeah.
Yeah, you could just Google that and see that shit in a second. But back then, it took giant reels and shit that you had to put in it and a lot of power.
Yeah.
And he had to describe it to a machine that then drew it in wireframe. And then somehow magically found
a photo, which it printed out on that classic old school dot matrix kind of printers.
Yeah, which is cool. It was cool. And it was Locke. Locke was one of the henchmen.
And it, as you noticed, during that scene, Q, the actor for Q, who's been in 12 of these things by this point, staring right at the camera.
Yeah, there's one shot where he's just staring straight at the camera, like, not giving a fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's like, just, like, somebody didn't catch that he was staring at the camera, but he's hardcore staring at the camera.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And but he, yeah, like you said, he's been in a shitload of these movies. He should know by now.
It's like almost, he's a pro. Like, come on, bro.
Yeah, it's like they shot the rehearsal and he just stared at the camera, and then they're like, "No, you know what? Keep that. Nobody's gonna notice."
Yeah. Well, they didn't figure someone would be doing a podcast about it. So
eventually,
jokes on them.
Be watching it on a 1080p LED television, and we would catch that immediately.
So before we get to that identograph, though, I did want to talk a little bit about that amazing car chase. So because before we get there, before he even sees that guy, the reason he sees that guy is because he goes to investigate driving a Lotus, by the way.
That's right.
No Aston Martins that I could see in this movie. It was James Bond always was driving a Lotus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was, seemed very weird to me.
Yeah.
So he's searching, and I believe they're supposed to be in Spain at that time.
Yeah, they're going to Italy later, but I think they're in Spain at that time.
It's a little unclear. This movie jumps around so much to different European countries that I got to admit I lost kind of track at times where exactly they were supposed to be. But that's the pool scene, and that's the scene where the guy gets shot in the back with the arrow. And then afterwards, you know, Bond finds Melina. And they go running off. They're being chased by all these dudes with guns. They get in this... Well, first of all, someone tries to break into Bond's Lotus that then explodes.
Oh, yeah, that was badass.
That was so cool. It's like, oh, yeah, that's the best... That's the joke that people have had, like, for their car. They wanted their car alarm to be that for the years. Bond actually has that.
Yeah, and it was one of those cool things, like, oh, like, the gadgets. You know, they show the ridiculous gadgets, and they made fun of them a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, your watch can destroy this and that and shoot lasers and all that stuff. This is one that's a practical one. This is one that makes sense.
Yeah.
Somebody else tries to open your car door, guess what? It fucking blows up and it kills all.
They killed like three dudes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So he's, you know, Bond is just kind of his wiry, you know, Bond smile is like, I hope you have a car or something along these lines. And she does, but it's like one of these tiny little European, like, you know, two cylinder cars.
Yeah, it's like yellow.
Yeah. But they have this amazing car chase down this mountain, through this village. He goes over other cars, through these trees, through these people that are like, they're...
collecting like olives.
They're collecting olives or whatever and nets and stuff. And it's really a phenomenal car chase.
Oh, yeah. It's a really well shot. And especially because they get off the road a lot.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of driving through the woods, like through the trees and all that stuff and hopping over hills and stuff like that.
Yeah. And there's some rear projection stuff, so you can see Roger Moore and Carol, the Bond girl, and everything. But yeah, the stunt work, again, I cannot emphasize how much, especially when you think about, you know, it's 81. There's no CGI. There's no, you know, none of this is enhanced, really. There's a couple scenes that you can tell were sped up.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is legit stunt drivers doing some amazing work. And I think my only real complaint, I know you've mentioned some of the critics complained that it was slow.
Yeah, I guess at the time it had mixed reviews. I mean, it did really well in the box office.
Yeah.
But it did come out to some mixed reviews. And a lot of people said that it was a bit of a slow movie.
Which is insane.
No, because, yeah, there's a lot of chases and action in it.
Like, my only kind of, I guess... way I could kind of see that it is a fairly long movie, and my favorite two sequences, which is this car chase, which takes place maybe 10 minutes into the movie,
yeah,
which is fantastic, and then the snow chase sequence with the skis and everything,
the bobsled and all
that, that takes place maybe halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
And
a cool part in the first chase sequence when they flip the car over.
Yes.
And then they get up and they just flip the car back.
Yeah, because it's such a small little car that, like, they have a bunch of people come over and they just help them flip the car over and then give them a push start.
Yeah, push start, and then they just drive off. Because that's what cars used to be like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They used to be, back in my days, they made things to last.
If I park my car, like, on too much of a, like, slide, it won't start. Like, it's dead forever now.
Yeah, it's just done.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody's going to tell me, like, oh, the computer went out because of your sensors and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, back then you could flip a car over a bunch of times and just get out and push it back up and then push it down a hill and you're good.
Yeah, yeah.
If I learned anything from James Bond.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we learned a lot.
Yeah. But it had a lot of action. It had motorcycle guns.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yes. And that's one gadget that, like, I think is close enough to real that you're just like, that's super cool.
Yeah, for sure. You can put guns on a motorcycle. Why not? Not a Gatling gun, like just guns.
And we noticed too, like the motorcycles, because they're driving in the snow, their snow tires essentially are just these tires with all these spikes on them.
These badass spikes. Just
really good. Like they look really cool. The design of stuff in this movie is very fun, I think.
Yeah, and he fought like hockey players.
Yes, he fights hockey players.
Yeah, the scuba guy. There's like
so much action in this movie.
There really was, but it really had a feel like it wasn't relying on like wacky gadgets and wacky, but even the stuff.
There's
that
a couple
they did,
of good jokes, but I think, for the most part, it's played fairly. It's fairly action, fairly suspense based. Mm-hmm.
The technology, I thought, seemed pretty realistic.
For the most part, I mean, some of the stuff is a little far out there, but yeah, I think
you know, as opposed to, because this came right after Moonraker.
Yeah, which is the probably the most far out.
Yeah, he's out in outer space and shit. Like it was really like really out there. So this comes out and it's got really more realistic, I would say, technology in it, more realistic gadgets and explosions and things like that. Because before that, yeah, you saw a lot of crazy out there comedy with like the, you know, the lasers and all that stuff, and the stuff that kind of like everybody made fun of after.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. A couple of other things kind of before this car chase sequence started that I really laughed at. So the whole reason James Bond is manages to kind of sneak up on these on this pool party is that the guard is making out with one of the girls, which is realistic.
Yeah, it's a perk, I think, yeah, of being a guard.
Yeah, you're a guard at a pool party. but it's also a good lesson. If you are hired to walk around with a machine gun and guard a, you know, very rich criminal's pool party, do not get distracted by the girls in bikinis.
I would say that I would absolutely be distracted by
the I would too, yeah. 100%. That's why I'm not a guard at a criminal's pool party.
Yeah, I'm the worst. Do not hire me to be the guard at your criminal pool party.
I mean, do hire me, but do not expect I will actually guard anything.
Don't expect me to not fuck a chick.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I will do that 100% over your life. Yeah.
Oh, 100.
Yeah. It's not even a contest.
Yeah. And then, so during the fight, before the car chase, as Bond is fighting some of these guys, he grabs an umbrella and he hits one of the dudes with the umbrella. And then he uses the umbrella Mary Poppins style to like float down like a 10-foot cliff or whatever.
Which I believe. And I think I'll try.
Yeah.
Like, I think I believe that I can survive that. 100%.
I mean, he would have survived regardless. It's not that long of a jump.
No.
But it was just hilarious that he was like, oh, chip, chip, I've got this parachute. I'll just jump on down.
Yeah. And then we're just going to jump off the cliff and then be safe. No, I believe that 100%. I will do that.
There's also some, and this happens again later during the, or at the beginning of kind of the skiing chase in the snow, is there is excellent squib work as he's running away. Like, they do a great job with the timing and the placement as these guys are shooting at him and the squibs are going off and it's kicking up dirt and everything all around him and the tree branches are breaking and stuff. Really good timing, really like professional work that you don't really see as much. A lot of times now you just see him with CGI and it looks kind of fake and stuff. Here you can tell like there's dirt flying into his eyes and tree branches and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, which is, I think it's rare that we compliment a movie for its squid work.
Yeah, I think. I mean, this is only episode 2, so we'll see.
Yeah,
but that's not a thing usually when we're talking about movies that comes up.
No, and this was really good squid work. Yeah, you're right. Everything looked authentic. It looked real, and especially nowadays, getting used to like the CGI squibs that come out and there's just fake dust that disappears into nowhere.
Yeah,
and things like that. Like, it was really nice to see like real work put into that the direction was right,
mm-hmm.
That everything like hit right on point when he's running by or whatever. Yeah, I thought it was really good effects and really good stunt work and really good script work for sure.
And it really makes a difference, I think, just in terms of your experience as an audience. Like, it looks legit. It looks really good, and it really brings you into the movie.
Yeah, for sure. And
Another thing I did real quick before he gets into the car, I told you it's kind of one of these tiny little European cars that we Americans with our gas guzzlers and stuff will make fun of. But he looks at this car and just incredulously like, wait, I'm riding this? I'm James fucking Bond.
Yeah, he's James Bond.
He gets in, obviously, because they're shooting at him. But it was a funny moment, I thought.
Yeah, it had a couple really funny moments. I think maybe not as much as some of the other, like, crazier James Bonds, where everything is kind of a tongue-in-cheek joke.
Yeah.
But this one had some really good lines in it. Like, yeah. The whole, like, ice cream thing with the
That was
with
very BB, good, yeah.
Which is good, which is like, why don't you put your clothes on, I'll get you some ice cream.
There's another really funny bit later on. Melina comes back in after the snow chase. He meets up with Melina again. And he sneaks into like a flower shop because he's trying to hide from some dudes. So he ducks into this flower shop and he orders like a dozen lilies. And, you know, he's like looking and he sees that they're about to attack Melina. So he runs out. He saves Melina. He ends up using this thing to send the motorcycle guy through the flower shop, through the glass, you know, classic plate glass window breaking and everything, and walks back in, and the lady's like, "Your flowers," and he's like, "Send them to the funeral."
Yeah, just an awesome really badass moment. Yeah. Yeah, great badass line where you're just like, "Oh, that's right, he's James Bond."
Yeah,
he's a fucking badass. Sometimes you forget that he's not an old man, and he's like, I mean, he is an old man, but he just is going to kick some ass.
He kicks ass. He's still James Bond
all the way across the board.
But I guess that. I just feel like, I mean, there's not a whole lot to say, but that chase sequence basically he goes to visit, he's researching this thing, he goes to what essentially is like an Olympic training ground area. I wasn't completely sure if that was supposed to be the actual, like, official, you know, Olympic area that they're getting ready to put on, or if this was just a training facility. But they have the luge, they have the skiing, the downhill, the
bobsled,
They have you know, the figure skating with BB, and that whole chase sequence, phenomenal,
amazing.
It's so good,
and it's amazing to think that that was all stunt work.
Yeah, it's, I mean, all legit stuff.
Yeah, there's some speed ramping in there, obviously. And like you said, like some rear projection.
And it's pretty clear that it's not Roger Moore doing the skiing and stuff, but still, like, that stunt guy, and all the stunt guys, the people on the motorcycles, the bobsled, everybody, like, wow, really phenomenal stuff.
Yeah, and especially nowadays, to look at, like, the crazy stunts that are being pulled off now in CGI, where everything has to be kind of bigger and bigger and bigger, and you get, like, you know, cars driving out of buildings into other buildings and things like that. Like, to see real stunt work throughout the whole movie. This isn't just one scene or two scenes or anything like that. Like, it's throughout the whole movie. Every scene has really cool stunts in it.
Yeah.
Even there's that great scene where they tie them to the back of the boat and they use them as bait.
Yeah, and that's a couple of guys. Obviously they're not being pulled at that speed or anything like that. They're probably not being even that boat or anything like that, and they're not in the ocean. They're in a pool, most likely. But yeah, it's people getting dragged underwater and stuff and having to hold their breath. Like, it's legit stuff, and it looks really good.
Yeah, it looks amazing. I think if anything, like, this movie, you can commend it for its awesome stunt work. And then it's kind of like a back to basics James Bond feel to it. Yeah. Where,
I mean, I think it's really clear to me watching this movie. I mean, first, obviously, it was hugely successful, which is why they brought the director back. But also, like, he does a really great job just with keeping the action up, making the action look cool, all the stunts. You know, the romance stuff, like, it really delivers. It's not like there's not anything in the cinematography that stands out as being, you know, exceptional or anything like that, and the performances aren't, you know, otherworldly, but it's a James Bond movie. Like, you're not looking for, you know, Academy Award winning performances. Like, you're looking for some fun and some action and some sexiness, and, you know, that's what you get.
And I thought it had some pretty good acting in it. And speaking of the actors in it, it had Julian Glover in it.
Yes, who plays... He ends up, spoiler alert again, he starts off, you think he's an ally to Bond. He ends up being the main villain.
Christatos.
Yes. Yeah. And you also... And fun fact, for you Game of Thrones fans...
Charles Dance is also in this.
Charles Dance. And both of them are in Game of Thrones. Charles Dance, of course, better known as Tywin Lannister, for you Game of Thrones fans. And
Julian Glover's
Master Pycelle. I did not recognize it first. Charles Dance, you know, doesn't look that different. He's kind of one of these ageless dudes, but I did not recognize Master Pycelle at first. But yeah, kind of a cool little connection.
Yeah, it's cool little like reunion that they did. Yeah, almost. Yeah,
and they definitely had some. And the fun thing is, in this, Charles Dance is working as one of his minions, and obviously in Game of Thrones, Charles Dance is kind of in charge, and Pycelle is just kind of working for the Lannisters. So. Kind of a fun reversal.
Yeah, it's a cool little reversal. Also, Topal, who played Miles Colombo, the Greek guy, he has got a cool, really cool scene in the boat where they use the camera to make it look like the boat.
Yeah, that was the one moment that really stood out to me from a cinematography point of view was, yeah, they do that whole sequence, the camera's moving and kind of swaying back and forth to kind of simulate, obviously they were on a studio, but to try and make it seem like, oh yeah, they're on a boat and it's rocking back and forth. And it was an interesting choice.
Yeah, there was a couple of scenes that were shot on the studio that were made, like the underwater.
Yeah, the underwater stuff is split between, there's legitimate stunt people underwater in I believe it's a pool.
Yeah, it looks like a pool. Yeah, and then there's like the close-ups.
And then the close-ups are actually dry for wet.
Yeah, yeah, they actually shot them with a fan on their hair to make the hair move behind them, added the bubbles later. And I guess the reason for that is because of the actress that plays Melina had like sinus issues, and she couldn't have the snorkel, and she couldn't be underwater. So they had to shoot this fake underwater scene.
In a weird way, though, it kind of works because when they go to the dry for wet, like the visual quality changes a little bit, and it's a little clearer and a little crisper. But it kind of works because that moment, it's a moment where it's her and Bond kind of looking into each other's eyes. And yeah. So it almost shines so to you this want point it to be, of, yeah. Yeah, it really kind of shines and picks up where you're like, oh, she's so pretty, and oh, you know, they're in love, whatever.
Yeah, one of the other things is that the cliffhanger scene, Roger Moore, I guess, suffers from really bad vertigo, and he couldn't do the cliffhanger scene, so they had to get like the stunt guy to do almost all of it. So the close-ups of him up on the cliff, he's actually like 5 to 10 feet off the ground.
If because, that, yeah.
Because he has really bad vertigo. So there's a lot of, like, Hollywood magic.
But it's done, I mean, we noticed, but I don't think, especially, like, I certainly didn't notice when I was a kid.
Yeah. Definitely.
And I don't even know how many people would notice now.
No, it's actually, it's really well done. I think it's really well done and really well shot. And I think it's one of those things that if you tell somebody, like, oh, check it out, they didn't shoot that underwater, then you notice it. Then you're like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
Cool, yeah, that's true. They didn't shoot that underwater, but... when you see it, it's a really well done, I think, movie. I guess it's aged pretty normal. Like, it still holds a 76 on Rotten Tomatoes, I believe, which is good. I think for back then, like, it's still, there's still people that have, like, some complaints about it. It ranks number 22 as far as James Bond movies go, which I think is unfair.
Yeah, I would put it above that for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I think it would be up there.
That actually, let's real quick, just again, and get a little bit on our Bond connection. What would you say your history is with Bond?
Oh man, you know, Bond is one of the only like real franchises and kind of genre specific movies that I never super got into, to tell you the truth. I was always like really into horror. I was always really into like thrillers and things like that, but. And a lot of the genre movies, like comedies and stuff. But James Bond, I never super got into sci-fi, obviously, with Star Wars and all that I was super into. James Bond, even though sometimes it gets into sci-fi a lot, it was one of those ones that I watched when I was younger. I remember Goldfinger. I remember I loved that movie so much when I was young. But it was one of those ones that I never had to like watch from the beginning to end, like some of the other movies that came out at that time.
Yeah, I'm not too far off from that. You know, it was one of those things that pretty much any time they were on TV, I'd be like, oh, sweet, James Bond. And I would watch, but I never owned any of them. They weren't something that I watched over and over again. But I always enjoyed. Like I said, it pretty much, you know, if they were on, I was probably watching them. And I'm definitely, you know, I'd seen this one, but again, I was, you know, it must have been 15, 20 years ago the last time I saw some of these older ones.
Yeah, and I'm a fan of the new ones. I do like the new ones.
Yeah, I really like Casino Royale. I actually wasn't as crazy about Skyfall as a lot of people were.
Quantum of Solace, though, I liked more than a lot of people did.
I like Quantum, yeah. It's good. I still think, for me at least, of the new ones, Casino Royale was my favorite.
Yeah, just an awesome kind of like prequel to all of them.
Yeah, and I thought, I just, again, like the stunt work in that I think is really strong. And I think it has like a really strong, like, kind of, it's a simple story, but it has enough to keep it interesting. And I like Eva Green a lot, who's the main girl in that.
Obviously,
she's very attractive. And a very good actress. I like her in pretty much everything. She's kind of the only saving grace of that terrible 300 sequel.
So, would it be fair to say then that you definitely recommend this movie?
This movie, for sure. 100%. If you're a Bond fan, or if you're just a fan of an action movie, I would 100% recommend this movie.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I mean, it definitely has the 80s like synthesizer on there, so you get a lot of that.
The soundtrack's not great.
No, the music, the score is not great. I mean, but it's the 80s, it's the early 80s. There was a lot of sideburns and stuff at the time. I can see why the music is just...
No, boring. I mean, the music totally makes sense for when it was made. It's just, I mean, for me, my personal taste, it's not the best, but it's, you know, it's fine. It works. It fits.
Yeah, but I would say that I would definitely recommend this as a standalone action movie, I would think.
You don't really need to necessarily know any of the other Bond movies. Like, it's just a really fun action movie. I did want to say a couple of things before. I know we're kind of already at final judgment, but just to jump back real quick, I know we're getting late on time. There's a couple of things that, and maybe you out in the audience, you know, we always welcome you to email us, blockbusternostalgia@gmail.com. After he rescues Melina, he sends her off, and he goes to investigate, and, you know, he gets in some more trouble. There's some more action sequences, some fun stuff. And then he just leaves to go back to her.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He just, like, takes
and
off.
He knows they're there. Like, the people he is after are there, and he's just like, nah, I want to go get laid.
Yeah. I think James Bond will always choose pussy.
Yeah, always.
Yeah, I think that given the... And I think he has proven time and time again that given the opportunity to kill the bad guy or apprehend the bad guy or even, like, go back to headquarters or whatever... And if there's a hot chick there, like, he's just going to bang that hot chick.
For sure. And there's a couple, just so we're kind of covering everything, there's a really fun sequence underwater where they have to go get the MacGuffin out of the sunk ship. And there's a whole big fight between this kind of mech scuba suit.
Oh, super cool scuba suit. This very giant scuba suit with, like, these motorized claw hands.
Yeah. Very cool. What were we comparing? It's almost like the Big Hero 6 monster, or not monster, robot. But robot.
Yeah. Or we talked about the robot from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah. Marvin from that.
Yeah, Marvin.
Even kind of, I don't know, it doesn't look like it at all, but just because of the hands, it made me kind of think of Ripley and Aliens.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It was like this exoskeleton type of suit. Really cool fight scene too. The scene when they're getting dragged through the water and they're being used as bait.
Yeah,
I thought it was really cool that they hit coral and that it cuts up James Bond.
Yeah, and it breaks off and it's pretty legit looking.
And you can see where it spawned off like a lot of cliches or even the comedies, even Austin Powers and stuff like that.
And Archer, obviously, yeah. But they all, I mean, it makes sense. Like there's stuff in there that if you want to look at it as ridiculous, you can. But I think this one, especially of kind of the older Bond movies, is more grounded. So I think it's a little harder to make fun of.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's such a solid movie and not so over the top and comedic and things like that. Yeah, I would definitely recommend it.
I would too. And I would like to say too, the costume people on this movie, you earned every cent because...
Every like 5 minutes.
At least. Every like 3 minutes there is a costume change. And it's not just Bond. It's everybody.
Because
they're constantly in different locations. They're constantly doing different things. Even the fact that they go scuba dive... Or they're in the water 3 times. Each time it's in a different kind of scuba outfit. Like... They really switch it up.
And they get, like, to play cards in there, so he gets to wear, like, a tuxedo.
Yeah, exactly. They get that kind of must-have, you know, gambling sequence.
Which I still know what that game was.
I have no idea what he was playing.
It looked Baccarat-ish, but not Baccarat.
It wasn't quite, yeah.
No, yeah.
But they were using those giant, like rectangle chips.
Which are, like, $1,000 or something like that. Yeah. So it was cool. James Bond gets to do that. Yeah. If anybody should bet those all the time and win... It should be James Bond.
And I did love too at the towards the end when they're fighting and they go through the sky glass or the sky what's the word I'm thinking of there? The window.
The window in the monastery, right?
And they land right on the bed. Just super convenient, right on the bed.
Yeah. Good old fashioned luck, I guess. James Bond luck, you would say. Yeah, even that scene was really cool in the monastery or whatever, like the outside and The whole rock climbing scene was really cool.
Yeah,
a lot of suspense. So. Yeah. Oh, he was wearing those Converse for some reason.
Yeah, he's wearing these kind of rock climbing shoes that basically look like Converse.
Yeah, looked like awesome Converse, like blue and black Converse, which I would totally buy those Converse.
Yeah, I would rock those shoes.
Yeah, because Roger Moore rocked them.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I would totally rock
them. And then even the very, very end, kind of after the climax, just like James Bond 101. Like, I think it reminded me, I believe Octopussy, I think, has a very, very similar ending when they're in the submarine and they're having sex at the end.
Oh, the ending was great. Yeah. Where him and Melina are like having sex on this boat.
Yeah, and his handlers or whatever back at MI6 are trying to contact him. Yeah, and he just leaves the watch with the parrot who's talking to them.
Yeah, the parrot is like saying all these lines to Moneypenny, and she's like listening to the parrot like if he was James Bond.
Yeah,
like if she can't tell the difference between a parrot and James Bond. Which I don't know, back then maybe the phone reception was
awesome. Might have been any voice, you know.
Yeah,
but yeah, so that pretty much wraps up the movie itself. I think we both really enjoyed it.
Yeah, for sure.
As I kind of alluded to at the beginning of the podcast, this is not the last time we'll see James Bond. As we said, John Glenn, who did this movie, he did the next four. He did all of the Bond movies in the 80s. There was five of them in total. And
they were all hits, I think.
They were all hits. However, not all of them are on the list. No. I'll tell you right there, right now, we're not going to talk about Timothy Dalton.
No, not at all. We are not talking about Timothy Dalton.
Other than to say, we did a pop quiz. And actually, I'll throw this out to our female listeners as far as who is the hottest James Bond. We happened to ask the one girl in the room, and she ranked Timothy Dalton last.
Yes, which I would do as well.
I think so. And then Roger Moore, however, came in just above that. So not doing too great. And then I think it was, Daniel Craig, Pierce Brosnan, and Connery at the top. So, yeah. Ladies, whatever your choices is.
Yeah.
Go ahead and let us know on the email.
Yeah, we'll bring it up. We'll say it. We'll
yeah, say it. Especially because we're going to get to another Bond movie. We'll probably maybe compile a list for that Bond movie, like a impromptu, I guess, survey.
Yeah.
And we'll let you know the results.
And, yeah, I think usually by this point we do like a comparison to another movie.
So do you have one off the top of your head that you would recommend if they were a fan of this?
Off the top of my head, because I like the Molina storyline so much, I would go with The Quick and the Dead. Sam Raimi's revenge tale.
That was an excellent movie.
Sharon Stone coming back after her father's death. And I think this is Melina's father gets killed. And she comes back and she gets help from this kind of like superb other character, James Bond in this case. And in Quick and the Dead, it was it Russell Crowe?
Yeah.
Yeah, Russell Crowe helps her out and things like that. I think I would go with that just based on the revenge my father got killed subplot in this movie.
Yeah, that's very fair. I actually have a lot of suggestions for this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go through them pretty quickly, just so that we don't get caught up too much. The first off, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen it, Mission Impossible. It's obviously essentially the American James Bond. They're all pretty fun. I'm pretty excited for the new one, actually. And I even mentioned during the rock climbing scene how insane it is that Tom Cruise, who's worth like $1 billion, does all these insane stunts like rock climbing on like cliff faces and shit.
Yeah, like free climbing.
Yeah, no ropes, just fucking jumping across cliff faces. He's an insane dude. So those are always pretty fun. First Strike with Jackie Chan.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's
kind cool. of a spy movie, and it just reminded me in terms of it's a nonstop action thing where every few minutes there's a new big action sequence, big chase sequence, big fight sequence, something. Very fun stuff. My next two kind of break the rules that we've had for one episode.
Yeah, so, the first episode. Yeah.
The first episode. The first one is Lupin the Third.
Oh.
Now,
interesting.
Yeah, now Lupin the Third, there's been a couple of movies. Lupin the Third is originally a comic character, manga character, who's been many animes and anime movies have been made on him. There's been several movies, including one by Miyazaki, very famously, you know, award-winning director of Spirited Away and Ponyo and, you know, all these others. I would specifically like to recommend the original anime series, which I believe ran from like 79 to 82 or so.
Yeah,
so right around the same time this movie is coming out. And it's not a spy thing. If you're not familiar with Lupin, he is a master thief. But he's a gentleman thief. He's not out to hurt anybody. In fact, most of his crimes are just like he's doing them both for fun and also to like help people out a lot of times. And I just remember like the very first episode of the series, I believe, he's in Monte Carlo, he's driving in the Grand Prix, he's gambling in the casinos, he's wearing tuxedos, there's beautiful women. Like it just has that very James Bond kind of adventure-y feel.
Yeah, very gentleman.
Yeah, like gentleman, but a man of action who is also a gentleman and a suave and that sort of thing. So if you like that kind of element of James Bond, I think Lupin the Third is a good place to go, especially if you're fans of kind of the older Bond, you know, the Connery and the Roger Moore Bond. I think that's a good place. And finally, I just want to give a quick recommendation to it's actually a comic book series called Velvet from Image Comics, Ed Brubaker, Steve Epting on art. Basically, the premise of this is it's not actually using James Bond or anything, but essentially it's James Bond is killed in the first issue and Miss Moneypenny is framed for his murder. And you find out she was actually, like, she's retired now, but she was actually a master spy. And she has to go on the run to solve James Bond's murder and to, like, kind of clear her own name. And it jumps back and forth through different decades and stuff as we flash back to early younger Bond, younger Miss Moneypenny, which isn't actually her name in the comic, obviously, because it's not her. But if you like, it's much more kind of gritty and realistic spy story. There's no kind of gadgetry, none of the kind of the silly Bond stuff. But if you like kind of the hardcore espionage, if you're not familiar with Brubaker and Epting, they did the Captain America run that Winter Soldier was based off of. Ed Brubaker also does a lot of kind of crime noir books, criminal, fatale. That's kind of his wheelhouse. So if you're into that kind of thing and you like comic books, which I certainly do, I would recommend that series.
Interesting bit of trivia too. When this movie came out, when For Your Eyes Only came out, United Artists actually released a comic book, like a 5-issue comic book series, just based on this movie.
Yeah, which is a thing that happened a lot back in especially in the 80s, and that's something we'll probably talk about with several of the films we have coming up, is that was a really popular thing. There was a lot of comic book adaptations, in this, especially in the 70s and the 80s, especially before like mid to late 80s when VHS really took off, because remember, 70s and even into the early 80s, if you wanted to see a movie again, like, you probably didn't have a VCR. Like, you either had to wait for it to come on to TV.
Or buy, like, a 16mm print.
Right, which people just didn't do, really.
Yeah, you had to have a lot of money. And, yeah.
So, the comic books were a fun, you know, and an easy way to be able to be like, hey, kids, you want to relive Star Wars? You want to relive Indiana Jones?
Yeah, even, like, E.T. Yeah, and E.T., things, yeah.
Here's the comic book version.
So even this got the comic book treatment.
Which now I really want to kind of track that down and read. I think the next con I go to, I'm going to look for that.
Yeah, you might just eBay it and find it for like $5.
That doesn't sound as fun.
No, maybe not. Maybe tracking it down is better.
So, yeah, next up we're going to be doing Tango and Cash.
Awesome. I'm super excited for Tango and Cash.
I'm really excited for it, too. We love Stallone. We mentioned that last week.
Yes. Kurt Russell?
We're big Kurt Russell fans.
And then Kurt Russell and Dragon at some point, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
And Terry Hatcher, who I, spoiler alert, had a bit of a crush on as a kid.
In the 80s, Terry Hatcher, oh my God.
Even into the night, like into the early 90s when she was on like Lois and Clark.
Yeah.
Yeah, super into it.
So we're super excited for that. Next week, hopefully you tune in.
Yeah, so please come back. Join us again. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Please check us out. The blog is blockbusternostalgia.blogspot.com. Email, blockbusternostalgia@gmail.com.
Please rate us. Give us good ratings. Good ratings.
Subscribe, rate, give us comments.
And send us emails. Send us emails and ask us questions or just talk shit to us. I don't
pretty
care.
Much. Yeah, we are still planning. We'll have some Q&A sessions coming up. We are going to have some guests. We're already in the midst of scheduling some people coming up. So thank you again for listening. And we love you.
Yeah, I'm Francisco Landin.
I'm E.G. Seitz. This is Blockbuster Nostalgia, Grady's Edition.
Yeah, have a good night.